Hi, this is Mary H.K. Choi, and you're listening to Hey Cool Life, a micropod about mental health and creativity. This is episode 151. It is March 24th, 2023. I am here. It is Friday, and this week was a struggle. I have been sleep deprived because I still have jet lag from being in LA 2 weeks ago, and I'm not allowing myself to have jet lag, so I am just like careening around my life with urgency, feeling as though I have to make up for those now with daylight savings 4 hours that I'm missing out of the day. And then all that lack of sleep just, and like the overscheduling to make sure that I don't, God forbid, that I rest or that I just allow those rhythms to reaccommodate or readjust. And so that's kind of what I tend to do. I overschedule, you know, just to keep myself on the P's and Q's, just to make sure that the pack of wild dogs that are chasing me from place to place are just like good and robust and like really important. And yeah, and it sort of calls to mind something that I'm learning now, which I find so fascinating, which is that, you know, I often talk on this pod about perfectionism and how my brand of perfectionism isn't trying to be perfect. It's that I have this like idea or ideal of the way something should be, and then I really try to adhere to that. And when I fall short, inevitably, I get incredibly discouraged. And I wanted to talk about perfectionism kind of in light of the way my ADD or my ADHD sort of commingles with it, which is that, like, you know, ADHD for me exhibits in that I have very, very, very low impulse control, and my executive decision making is really shot. And so if I have an ideal of the way something should be and I have impulse control issues, then, you know, I could be looking at one thing, but I'm distracted by like 10 things, and not even just 10 things, but the 10 very specific ways those things should be. And so sometimes it's that like I'll be getting up in the morning to meditate, and I will realize that I'm thirsty, and I'm like, be kind to yourself, be gentle. You don't have to rush to meditation. That is antithetical to what meditation even is about. And so I'll get a glass of water. And as I get a glass of water, then I think, oh, well, I have to water my plants. And if I'm thinking, oh, I have to water my plants, it's like, oh, I have to water myself inside, but I also have to water myself outside. So let's go ahead and fill the humidifier as well. And so I'll have like 20 of these, maybe like hydration related tasks or not. And each time I do it, say like I water a plant, but then I don't remember the last time I watered it. And then I'm like, well, then I'm only going to water this half, but not this half. Like all of these sort of fractals become just infinite. And I notice that when I am, you know, like tired or depleted or overtired, I kind of attend to all of these different things, and I have less ability to dictate what thing I'm going to do next. And so I find that really interesting, because my perfectionism, or what I call perfectionism, is heightened when my ADHD is heightened. And it's also all heightened when I'm depressed. And I say this because depression for me exhibits in a way that I don't associate with the word depression. And so I'm talking about this just to invite some curiosity around, you know, any connotations that you might have around certain words and the conviction that maybe they don't apply to you. Like for the longest time, I thought I didn't get depressed because I didn't have the kind where you can't get out of bed and you know, you're morose or you're sleeping too much. My depression, and I feel okay, you know, like I don't feel like it has to be like in accordance with like the DSM-5 or anything like that. My depression actually looks manic. And it looks incredibly high functioning and almost hyper functioning because I'm basically running around with no impulse control, with a perfectionism that is almost bordering. And I don't have OCD, but like sometimes looks like OCD from the outside. And all of these things are just really heightened when I am just having a bad brain day, like a neurochemistry day that's just out of whack. And yeah, so like depression for me looks like indecisiveness, many, many decisions all of a sudden, and me trying really, really hard to satisfy all of them. And what that looked like the other day, and I'll just give this as an example, is that on whatever little journey I was having before my way to meditation, which is the thing that I do earliest in the morning, I was convinced that I had to send this package to a friend of mine. And I put a book and some tea in a paper package, but the package was like over, like it was just floppy and like just unattractive to me, right? So I folded it in half, making sure that everything just, you know, was like real snug and just like perfect and wouldn't get jostled in flight or whatever. And then I folded it down and to my delight, it like folded directly in half. And I was just like, okay, I'm just going to tape up the sides. I'm going to write the address on here. It's going to be great. I tape up the sides, and one side, as I'm taping it up, has just a hair caught in the duct tape or the packing tape. And of course, I use 3M packing tape because the way the other kind rips makes me want to end my life. And that's also the way depression exhibits for me. Like the stakes for every tiny thing in my life on this like uninterrogated impulse machine journey is just really high. And so when I saw that hair in there, and it was like I couldn't rip it out. Let's be honest, and I was definitely in a blaming place. It was my partner's hair. It was like a shorter like hair than mine. And I was like, ah. And just that like evidence of like a human having packed this package, it just felt like really repulsive to me. And I was like basically like wincing and like cringing that the person I was sending this to would know that a human being with like dust and like hairs in their house had sent it to them. And I could see that, and I could see myself spiraling, and I was like, oh. And then I could finally just like offer myself some gentleness and be like, oh, your baseline for not liking yourself is just really, really not in a good place. And you're working so vigilantly not to show anyone else. And any evidence of this like disguise slipping has you completely overwhelmed and completely despairing and beside yourself. And so like, yeah, like from outwardly, it was like, you know, I'm on it. Like I'm sending gifts. I'm like doing things. I'm like perfect penmanship. The envelope is the good size. And the second any of that falters, it's like, I'm devastated. And so like sometimes these like terrors of manic hyper-productiveness and like being good at life sends me into like a horrible meltdown and crash. And like ADHD people have like really higher levels of emotionality and emotional turbulence. And I don't really need to do that anymore. I can just sort of identify. I mean, I say that I don't have to do it, but I definitely still do it. But like, I can identify that like the way certain things show up for me aren't the ways that I expect things to show up. Because the other part of my perfectionism is that like, if if you're depressed one way and I'm not depressed that way, then I must not be depressed because I cannot possibly be my own authority on whether or not I'm like in a good place or not. And, you know, I felt that way about the word trauma. I felt that way about the word grief. I feel that way about perfectionism and all of these things. And I'm just learning how to be mindful of that like I can know about myself that I go around in the world pretty suspicious about the way I think about things. And sometimes that's really great. Like sometimes that's really served me. Like I know a lot of the time when I think I'm hungry, it's that there's probably an emotion I am trying to avoid. And that's a protector part in me throwing up a signal that, hey, guess what? Do you want a snack? Because maybe I'm doing something that is uncomfortable, which is a lot of the time for me, since I fundamentally find sitting down to write really uncomfortable and really like shameful. That's how I write. Like it feels bad. And I don't know how other people do it, and God bless them. But if you feel like, oh no, like I'm doing it wrong because it feels bad, like I just want to put a little post-it on that to be like, are you exactly right? Are you crushing it at feeling bad and doing the thing anyway? Like, I don't know. And the other thing is, you know, I'm trying not to just dump a bunch of like negative stuff. It's like, I did a lot of things yesterday that I'm really proud of that felt perilous. You know, it feels dangerous, I think, sometimes to be honest about needing help. And even that, it just sounds so obvious and like, yeah, like people want to seem self-sufficient. Yeah. But I say things like that, but I don't really think about how that feels in my body. And yesterday I realized that if, you know, I don't know if you follow this particular corner of the news, but you know, the writer's strike looks like it may happen in May with the Writers Guild, which means that nobody can work. And, you know, or actually it means that people are electing to stop work in order to bargain and, you know, collectively demand changes in the ways that we are paid that are reflecting current technologies and profit systems. But what that means is, you know, I won't have, or it was feeling like yesterday that I wouldn't have enough qualifying payments to get health insurance for next year. Because if the strike starts in May and then goes through to the end of the year, and God forbid it won't, but like genuinely, I don't know. This is definitely my first time sitting here. And I was just like, wow, I'm going to actually have to ask what's going to happen. And I'm going to have to ask my union rep. I'm going to have to ask my, my agents. I may even have to ask my producers with whom I'm working to make this Yoke TV show and the Permanent Record feature film. Like, I'm going to have to ask them about money and like possibly advancing me money, not only so that I can live and eat during the strike, but so that I can make sure that I have health insurance for next year. And wow, it really felt in my body that I was like being unreasonable, and I was like humiliating myself, and I was like putting myself in danger. And I just know that when I feel that way, it probably just means that I'm having an uncomfortable conversation with people I believe know more than me about money. And I'm probably just embarrassed because I have a lot of like shame around self-sufficiency and money, like a lot of people do. And so, yeah, like I'm getting used to, I guess, the tone or the types of questions that might need to arise when I first have a very, very strong feeling. It basically feels like I'm like being like, you know what, there's something really great about not trusting yourself. And that isn't exactly what I'm saying, but I guess it is what I'm saying about the first very strong feeling. while also saying that we are well within our rights to command the agency to define certain headspaces as we know them to be and as we experience them, that may or may not mirror what other people are experiencing. Yes. Follow me. Anyway, all of this is always just an invitation to be gentle, to find new ways to be gentle, to be stealthy and like nimble in like the convoluted ways that we have to gentle here and gentle there, and then maybe be a little stern in the middle part. I don't know. But I hope you have a wonderful week, and yeah, big hugs.